Okay, welcome back to the Not Your Big Brothers podcast, the podcast where we discuss George Orwell's classic novel, 1948. I am Matalai, just as a reminder, 1984. Thank you, Nico. I am Matalai, just as a reminder.
I'm Sophia.
I'm Nico.
I'm Amadou.
And I'm Elliot.
Okay, so for this week's episode, we're going to be looking through the literary lenses, feminist lens, new historicist lens, and the Marxist lens at this book, and also discussing a little bit of the plot that we read for this week's reading, which was the rest of book two. We left off with Julia and Winston starting their affair and having their room over, I don't remember this guy's name, his like shop.
Charrington or something?
Charrington, something like that, yeah. There are rats and things. So anyways, Winston and Julia are all cool. And then there is Hate Week, which is like a big event for the war. And everything is thrown into overdrive. People are working and there are bombings. And Julia and Winston are still going strong. And then he gets approached by O'Brien, who's an inter-party member. And they like meet at his house, basically. And they join what's known as like the resistance against the party, supposedly. And they get access to Goldstein, who is like one of the enemies of the party, his book. And so that is where we leave off. And Amadou, if you want to go into the Marxist lens.
When I was thinking of the Marxist lens, the first quote that came to mind was on page 168 towards the bottom. And it says, when once you were in the grats of the party, what you felt or did not feel, what you did refrain from doing, made literally no difference. What happened, whatever happened, you vanished. Neither you nor your actions were heard of again. You were left cleaned out of the stream of history. And that just made me think of like, that's what the party does to stay in power and to like make sure that it's, to make sure that the people aren't trying to like go over to overrule him.
Yeah, what you're saying has to do a lot with like the party and class system. So there's controlling of the outer party, even though they are party members, they have a little bit more privilege and just status than the proles, who are like the bottom, lowest of the low. But you're completely right about like that's how they stay in power. They control the, you know, the people like, who are below them.
Yeah, like the people, the citizens that are like there basically.
And like this inner party, they do have such a control, but like they're able to be like basically say anything that you do will be forgotten. No one will remember you. You don't really matter. But it brings into question, does that happen for inner party members as well? Like, are they forgotten? Or like, do they have this whole different system where they remember everything? They remember each other. And like, that's even more control, where they're the only ones who can remember and who do remember people of the past and things of the past.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And the party, the inner party is like a very, very, very small number of people, which is also a point to make. So what you're saying, it's interesting, like how, like, because we know that Big Brother is, or whatever Big Brother is supposed to be, whether it's more theoretical or you know, actually real, Big Brother is the top. You know, if Big Brother is actually a person, does is there some sort of controlling of the inner party that goes on by Big Brother, the way that the inner party controls the outer party and the proles? And also to Sophia, what you're saying about how like their work basically doesn't matter because, you know, if something happens, they'll vanish. Marxism is all about class and material production, you know, the work that we do and what we produce. So it makes you think like, what is the point of all of this? You know, these people are doing this work and living these lives that essentially won't matter because they'll be erased from the history, especially if they, just in general, but especially if they're, you know, someone that is openly, or not openly, but found to be against the party.
Yeah, and they talk about it a little bit, but I'm pretty sure they mention how everything that they're making is pretty much not even going to be used or is just going to be destroyed in war. Exactly. So it kind of makes it like they have even less of a purpose.
Yeah, and it's they're treated so poorly, you know. The Proles especially, they're bombed constantly and they're always dying off. They have such short lifespans. So it's like, what is the purpose of, you know, obviously they're just being used by the party to continue the war. That's the main objective. But, you know, because of the thought control, what do you say, Nico?
First, I wonder who's profiting from, like, you know.
Yeah.
Like, are the members of the inner party benefiting from this regime, or is it just Big Brother or something?
Well, you know, they're the ones that are in power. This is how they benefit from the war and being in those positions.
Yeah, they talk about
there's not a lot of, like...
Sorry.
Go ahead.
They talk about how, like, the ultimate goal is to, like, world domination or whatever, but then they also mention how, like, they know that that's not realistic. So I feel like most of their goal is just to maintain their power.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have a quote that relates to that. It's on 193. It's from Goldstein's book. He says, "The aim of modern warfare is to use up the product of the machine." Oh, wait. No, that's not the right one. Okay. Wait, sorry. Okay. This quote from 207. It's about like class and stuff. The aim of the high is to remain where they are. The aim of the middle is to change place with the high. The aim of the low, when they have aim, is to abolish all distinctions and create a society in which all men shall be equal. So basically, the higher ups want to stay in power, obviously, and the middle feel like they have some ability to become a part of the higher power, the higher class. Yeah, especially in this society where it's like everything is war, everything is about the war. That's the only thing that's motivating anything and keeping this society going.
Yeah, this part was interesting to me too, because if they know that, at some point I think that they mentioned how in order to get to the inner party and even the outer party, you can get there from being a Prole and just like a test that you take at 16. So I think it's interesting how they don't just like keep the inner party as the inner party's kids and just like keep that bloodline, like I feel like most civilizations do, like even ours. But I think it's interesting how they know that and how the inner party doesn't get corrupted by people who know that they should change. So I'm curious how they maintain that.
That's a really great point.
It is also interesting how you have like the high class who want to keep their power, obviously the middle class who want to have the high party, but the low isn't like, the lower class isn't like, okay, we want to be the middle and the high. They want it to be, they want the status to be destroyed completely because they know they have no chance to be in the high, or they don't believe they can be there. So they just want there to be no class system, class structure at all.
Right. There's another quote from that same page 207 about what you're saying. This is about like the middle and how they try to move up. As soon as they have reached their objective, the middle thrust the low back into their old position of servitude and themselves become the high. Presently, a new middle group splits off from one of the other groups and the struggle begins over again. I think we should move into the feminist lens now, Sophia, if you want to take over.
I can go for that. So there weren't too many quotes that I can really find because this isn't really a book about sex, but obviously there are going to be moments where they talk about it. So there's one page, for at least for me, it was page 10, it was like within the first chapter. The quote was, "He disliked nearly all women, especially the young and pretty ones. It was always the women, and above all the youngest ones, who are the most bigoted adherents of the party, swallowers of the slogan, amateur spies, and noser outs of unorthodox." So he's like, kind of like, in like this lens, it kind of shows like, you know, Winston's generalizing all women, that like he obviously has not the best relationship because he's married to Catherine and that's not, he doesn't really love her. She's like in a different world, but so he never really had that good of an opinion of women, but like these women were never really given a shot to, you know, be themselves. Like maybe they aren't you know, always swallowers of the slogan. And obviously this is before Julia, so he didn't really have that chance. But it's just like,
yeah,
you should, maybe you shouldn't be saying all that stuff about, you know, all of women in the inner party.
Yeah.
Gender that much, except in relation to sex, personally. That's what I found.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was going to say, what you're saying, Sophia, it reminds me of, like, straight men today that are, like, incredibly misogynistic, even though they're supposed to, like, be attracted to women, but the attraction is turned into, like, a want or need to control, or it's just about sex. So for Winston, like, that's basically the only thing that he views women as good for, especially after his whole relationship with Catherine, and then like the destigmatizing, I guess, of like, you know, his feelings and romantic feelings towards women. There was a moment where, this is a little bit different, but for me it was 175, where they were talking to O'Brien. And the quote is, O'Brien had turned himself a little in his chair so that he was facing Winston. He almost ignored Julia, seeming to take it for granted that Winston would speak for her. So that's like another like very subtle version of like sexism, I guess, in the society, that women aren't really looked to like, I don't know. But that seems like, you know, that's something that happens every day in our world. So it's not that like far off, and it's the subtlety of it is what makes it realistic.
I mean, the underground like resistance is called the Brotherhood. Obviously it's just a name, but right. Also you can look at it and be like, huh, like obviously not like, oh, go all like sisters. But mm-hmm. like the fact that like one of the, a big shot in the Brotherhood is like turning away from her. And Nico, right. To your point about like how you really only hear about gender when they talk about sex, and that's a whole other thing, because it's not love, it's sex, it's your duty to the party. So it's like, it's not like usually, it's not that people. Yes, for sure. There's one more quote I want to bring up. This is kind of mm-hmm. this is when Winston just met Julia and they were chatting, and she brings up that in the Ministry of Truth and another, in the porno sect section, it's all women working there, except the higher ups, who are all presumably men. So it's kind of like they think like, oh, look, women, they're going to be less corrupted by the porn than the men, and they have stronger like resistance and more control, and that's right. All great. But then the fact that they're still being controlled by men higher up, so it's like, you say this, but like put more of them in higher up powers, and then like you won't be so contradictory. That's all. If you want to build on that, we can, or not, we can go to the new Hesorosis lens.
Okay. So the first quote I had was on 188 for me, but I think it's different for you guys. It's, a party member must live in continuous frenzy of hatred of foreign enemies and internal traitors. And I feel like that talks a lot to our current political scene, and how many, like we've kind of, or a lot of supporters have like lost the truth and like lost what were actually like the real problems, and they're so focused on like illegal immigrants and like problems overseas and stuff, and lose the truth of like how politicians are not fighting for them. And I just thought that that quote was very relevant to right now. Are there any thoughts on it?
I find it very interesting that a book written over like 80-ish years ago is so relevant to today's political in the United States. It's like crazy where it's true. It's like you have these people who are so, don't even know the realm of truth, and they're just acting off of instincts, off of one person. And it's just like so much like awful things are happening of it. And people just learn the truth, maybe wouldn't be in this situation.
Yeah, and I think it's also, sorry, Nico.
No, you can go.
Yeah.
I just gonna say it's kind of scary, like how this is. So I've been, you know, you think.
I have something I can bring up. History. He says that he grew up in what he calls lower upper middle class, and like his family wasn't wealthy, so he has a really unique perspective on class divide, which really plays into the book as we've seen. And this book was published and written during the years directly after World War II ends. And obviously this book is commentary on like the dangers of a totalitarian society and government. So those are just some of like the things about the book and him that play into the novel.
Yeah, and I think
I think people question the dangers of totalitarian society. I think it's more about like how one would like how to notice how one would function and how to avoid it, kind of like the prince maybe.
I think it's similar in both of these two, how the party members and like us or like Trump supporters are like completely blind to it, and like they'll just believe anything he says when he's in reality like everything he's passing is like against poor Americans, which is who he fed off of and promised stuff. And I think it's kind of the same with the party members, like they're promised, oh, we'll get out of this war, oh, we've been winning and we're getting closer, but like in reality they're just in this constant state of like just letting the government have all the power and not doing anything about it. Yeah,
that's a really good point, especially the part where the government is working against the people that support them. Well, I think we can wrap it up. That's all. Tune in next week for the last episode of the Not Your Big Brothers podcast. Adios.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Yeah.